Chapter 2. Ruth. Ruth Gelman poured the remains of the bottle of Pinot Grigio into her glass and instantly regretted it. Scott sat across the dining table from her, his wine glass empty for the past half hour of their Friday night meal. He'd watched her pour the wine, tipping the bottle upside down until she'd taken the final drop. But he didn't complain. The disapproving look was more than enough. "I've had a rough day," said Ruth by way of apology.
"It's fine," he said. "I don't want to get loaded before the game anyway."
Ruth noticed he hadn't asked her about her day. He never did on these Fridays. Ruth pushed her plate away. She'd barely touched the salmon, and the asparagus lay whole on the side. Even as she had prepared the meal, the thought of sitting down to eat it was far from her mind. She didn't want to eat tonight. No appetite, only a thirst. When the notion to drink hit Ruth, she didn't want food. Food was antithetical. It didn't help her to get to that serene space after the fifth glass. Scott was going out tonight. He went out every other Friday with the guys. Poker, bowling, pool. Sometimes they dropped the pretense and just hit a bar. "Poker?" she asked. He nodded, said,
"At Gordon's place."
"How is he?"
"Poor bastard has been hitting the bottle all week."
Gordon was one of Scott's oldest friends, a fellow Manhattan lawyer whose life was disintegrating. His wife, Allison, had kicked him out last week after she found messages on his phone from another woman. Gordon had been having an affair, and now he was paying the price. "How are Allison and the kids?" asked Ruth.
"She won't talk to him. You should message her and find out," said Scott.
"So you can tell Gordon? I don't think so. Allison and I were never close. If she reached out to me, that would be different. But I'm not fishing for information from Gordon. He's your friend. I don't want to get involved. And hey, don't tell me Jack will be there." Rolling his eyes at the mention of Jack, Scott said,
"I don't think so. Last I heard, he was still on vacation in Atlantic City."
That was one good thing, at least. Jack was an old friend of Scott's that he just couldn't shake, or more likely he didn't want to, no matter how much Ruth pressed him. They had been friends in high school, and while Scott had risen, Jack had fallen. Drugs, gambling, online fraud. If it was bad and illegal, then Jack was into it. "Well, if Jack's not there, at least you won't be high when you come home," said Ruth. Scott sighed, rose from the table with his plate, and carried it to the sink. He rinsed it and put it in the dishwasher, then came back over.
"Not hungry, huh?"
he said. There was more in that question, and she knew it. They'd been trying for a baby for a few months now. At 39, Ruth thought she couldn't put it off for much longer. She wanted kids, truly. But ideally, she wanted to be in a more stable position in the real estate firm before making that jump. She didn't want to be reliant on Scott and his income from corporate law. "What time will you be home?" asked Ruth.
"Don't wait up. The state that Gordon's in, I'd expect it to be a late one. He'll want to get wasted and forget his troubles, at least for one night."
She nodded. He took her plate, scraped the food into the trash. He still hadn't asked her what was wrong. It had not been anything in particular that had got to her that day. Just the stress of being a Manhattan realtor, traversing the city, meeting potential buyers and moving those sales. Competition was fierce, and she'd lost a client during the week. Nothing unusual about it, but it hurt just the same. If she unburdened her troubles on Scott, he would feel guilty going out with his friends. He would still go out, of course, and that might hurt Ruth more. They'd been married 5 years, and nothing much had changed since they'd moved in together. Scott still had his squash games twice a week, still went out with the guys every other Friday like it was holy writ. But since he'd insisted that Ruth stop her birth control pills, he'd begun to give her dirty looks when she opened a bottle of wine. If she opened a second bottle, she could expect to wake up the next morning to find an article waiting for her, hot from Scott's printer, beside a bowl of granola on the breakfast bar. It was invariably some study on the links between female infertility and alcohol consumption. Ruth hardly ever went out with friends. She'd always been a little light in that department, had been since she'd left high school. Ruth was never great at keeping friends, always too busy with something. She had people she could call up, but never did. Letting old friendships slide and not making new ones was a failing, something she recognized. A promise to call school buddies and meet new people regularly appeared on her half-assed New Year's list of resolutions. A drink after work on occasion with some of the partners in her firm was all that she had by way of a social life. Scott had worked in the district attorney's office as a prosecutor the first year they met. It was always going to be a temporary thing. Putting in some time to gain criminal law experience, give a little back to the community. His last 6 months in post had been a series of interviews with white shoe law firms from old money, whose business now stretched across the globe. He took a position as a litigator. This was not a 9-to-5 job. At first, it didn't bother Ruth. A realtor needed to do some evening appointments too. But with Scott's friends and social life, Ruth sometimes wondered where she fitted into his plans, other than as the little woman who would one day bear his children. Ruth took a fresh bottle of wine from the fridge, filled her glass, and moved into the lounge. She sat down on the plush, soft couch and began channel hopping. Scott's arms folded round her shoulders, and she felt his breath on her neck. First, his stubble grazed her cheek, and then she felt his soft lips in that sweet spot just below her ear. He stepped over the back of the couch, sat beside her, and they kissed. He held her then for a time and said,
"I'm sorry."
"I'm sorry too," said Ruth.
"No need for you to be sorry. You're not the one being an asshole," he said.
He smiled, paused, and added,
"For a change."
Ruth giggled, grabbed a cushion, and hit him on the head with it in mock offense. "I'm never the asshole in this relationship."
"Of course not. Look, you want me to grab a glass and join you? I could blow off the guys for one night."
"No, it's fine. I know you need your buddies. We can always do something tomorrow."
"We could go for a meal, then catch a movie. My treat."
"That's a date. Now go have fun." He held her tightly before letting go and getting up off the couch. This was what Ruth had always wanted, to feel safe and secure in a lover's arms. Her mother and father had split up when she was just 7. Ruth had no idea her parents' marriage was even in trouble. Everything was fine, and then it wasn't. One minute they were all in matching PJs opening presents under the Christmas tree. The next, she was seeing Dad every other weekend. Her eyes flicked to the wedding photo on the console table, Scott carrying her to the wedding car. Confetti and the blurred images of friends and family in soft focus framed their image. They both looked so happy. A layer of dust sat on the picture. In a way, Ruth found that dust comforting. They weren't a new couple, still getting to know one another, still wondering what the other was really thinking. Scott gave her love, but more than that, he gave her safety and security. And it was those feelings that Ruth prized most of all, that this wasn't just a long but ultimately doomed relationship. They were stable, solid. They had dust on their wedding picture.
"Okay, I'm out of here. Love you," he said from the hallway.
"I love you too," Ruth said. She thought about looking up an article on the effects of alcohol on sperm, printing it out and leaving it for Scott to find in the morning, as a joke, of course. She decided against it. She listened to his boots on the parquet floor of the hallway, the click of the deadlock sliding free, the brief blare of noise from a passing car, and then a deep, resonant slam as the front door of their brownstone shut. She took a long drink from her glass, set it down, went through to the kitchen. Standing on a chair, she retrieved a shallow, rectangular tin can from the top of the cupboard, brought it down, and opened it on the counter. Rolled a joint, stood at the back door overlooking the small garden. You couldn't really call it a garden. A 6x8 patch of grass. But it added half a mil to the list price of the house. She held the joint in her lips to light it. She didn't make a habit of smoking pot. Last time she'd lit up was Tuesday, just 3 days ago. She'd come out to the garden while Scott was in bed to watch the tribute in light. Two spires of spotlights projected into the sky from the top of Battery parking garage in tribute to the lost lives from September 11th. Like a lot of New Yorkers, that anniversary was hard, and she needed something to take the edge off. The pot helped with her anxiety, and she thought one joint wouldn't hurt. She wasn't pregnant. The trash bag in their bathroom was filling up with negative pregnancy tests. With just a little more time, some more high-value clients on her roster, then she would feel better about taking the time off to start their family. She sometimes looked at little booties and newborn outfits in the window of mother and baby stores, and those things only gave her a feeling of excitement and warmth. Ruth took another hit from the joint. It was mild stuff, bought long ago. She remembered her second date with Scott. They met, briefly, at a party. One of Ruth's old friends had invited him. They got talking and he'd asked for her number. For a low-intensity second date, he'd brought her to another party at one of his friend's apartments in Brooklyn. They'd made small talk, standard second date stuff, finding out more about one another. Then Ruth had spotted some people with a bong in the kitchen. She'd taken a hit and instantly regretted it. While Ruth had tried roll-ups, she'd never taken a hit before, and it produced an instant coughing fit. Scott took her up to the building's roof terrace. She could still remember the sky from that night, only a few clouds, thin and wispy, against a deep blue-black sky, and more stars than she'd ever seen before.
"Take deep breaths," said Scott.
Ruth inhaled, and while her throat and lungs no longer burned, the intake of oxygen had provoked a strong feeling of nausea.
"I think I'm going to throw up," said Ruth.
"I'm so sorry. This is a horrible date."
"It's fine," said Scott. "Normally my dates wait until they see me naked before vomiting."
Ruth laughed and her head spun. She stumbled into Scott, her palm landing on his solid chest to steady herself. He had a good build. He was just being self-deprecating. Gazing up into his face, Ruth said,
"We're on a rooftop in New York. I'm a little high and we're very close. Aren't you gonna give me a cheesy line right now and try for a kiss?"
"You want a cheesy line?"
"The cheesier, the better."
"I think your father is a thief," said Scott, "because he obviously stole some of these stars and put them in your eyes."
"Oh my God, that's so cheesy," said Ruth, and they both laughed. "What did you tell me you do for a living?" she asked.
"I told you I'm a prosecutor."
"Well, you should arrest yourself or something, because that was bad," she said, and raised her chin towards him, softly closing her eyes.
"I think I should get you home," said Scott.
Within a half hour, a cab pulled up outside Ruth's apartment building. They got out of the taxi and Scott joined her on the sidewalk.
"Do you want to come up?" asked Ruth.
"I do, but not tonight. I think you need some coffee."
Ruth remembered the feeling of disappointment. She'd let herself down, and now Scott didn't want to see her again.
"If you didn't want to come up to my place, why did you come with me in the cab?" she asked.
He leaned in towards her, said,
"I wanted to make sure you were safe."
For the first time, Ruth felt a flood of familiar and long-gone feelings, feelings of comfort and security.
"There's an ice cream parlor 2 blocks over. I'll see you there tomorrow at 1. My treat. They've got rum raisin."
Ruth giggled, said,
"Now I think you're really trying to make me puke."
With the memory of that night curling a smile into the corner of her mouth, Ruth stubbed out the joint. When the time came for Ruth and Scott to have a kid, it would be just fine. Her baby's parents would always be together. Her child would never have to go through what Ruth had endured. Scott and Ruth were rock steady. Back in the lounge, she brought the bottle of wine with her and found an old movie on TCM. It was just starting, She settled in for the night, finished the second bottle, and then went to bed. Ruth woke from a bad dream in darkness. The clock on the nightstand showed it was 11:45 p.m. She reached behind with her left hand. No one on the other side of the bed, just cold sheets. Shaking her head, she sat up. The time between turning off the movie and going to bed seemed a little hazy, but she remembered she had a glass of water by her bed. She drank, tried to force the remnants of the dream from her mind. Moments ago, she had been in her boss's office, being fired for losing a property developer client, and she didn't care to get back to that nightmare. It had not been the first time she'd had that dream. She sat up fully in the bed and reached for her phone. It wasn't by the bedside. She must have left it downstairs on the couch. She finished the water. The glass hit the nightstand with an almighty crash, the sound of glass exploding onto a hard floor. Ruth sat up straight, touched the base of the bedside lamp to turn it on. Her empty glass was intact, perfect. She heard glass being crunched underfoot, cracking, the skittering of glass across tile. It was coming from downstairs. Silence. Glass being crushed. Silence. Crunching glass. The small hairs on the back of her neck prickled. Her skin rose in goosebumps, the fear rising on her flesh. But then she heard something. A voice, perhaps, downstairs. Scott. Scott was downstairs, drunk, and he dropped a glass or plate. It had happened before, more than once, especially when he was out with deadbeat pal Jack. Maybe Jack had returned from Atlantic City, and he'd been giving Scott coke all night. Ruth threw off the covers, tied up her dark brown hair, and went downstairs in her night things, a vest and silk shorts. She hit the light switch on the landing, then took the last set of stairs to the first floor. She started calling out Scott before she reached the bottom of the stairs. "You frightened the hell out of—" The kitchen light wasn't on. From the light on the stairs, she saw broken glass on the kitchen floor. She reached inside, feeling for the switch, flipped it. The kitchen floor was covered with glass. She looked around, then saw that a pane had been smashed in the back door, the small one just above the door handle. The rest of the panes in the grid were intact. Then, in one of those panes, Ruth caught a reflection. A man, tall, dark clothing, fierce blue eyes, a long, narrow nose and square jaw. He was right behind her. An arm clamped around her throat, and a hand stifled her scream. There was something in that hand, something soft. It smelled bad, a chemical odor. Ruth fell to the floor, her knees giving way. Her vision swam, and then she heard his voice, deep, crackling in a long, thick throat, raspy and broken, and utterly, utterly terrifying. "Hello there, sweetheart." And the darkness took her.